Well, thank you very much, Sean, for that kind introduction. The thing that Sean didn't say is that back when I was doing economics at the council, I became known as Dr. Doom. And it was because we were facing some pretty serious challenges in the late 90s and early 2000, both with prices and from polyester, and the huge surge in polyester production all across Asia that really started eating into cotton's market share in a serious way. Today, by the time I'm done, hopefully it won't be doom, but it will reflect a very serious situation in Washington. And I think the title up there really tells you about it. You know, we shot for a farm bill in 2011. We didn't get that. We're working for a farm bill in 2012, but there might be an extension instead of a change, or there might be a transition bill that'll get you to 2013 when we write another farm bill. And I would say right now, all those options are on the table. I don't know that they're equally possible, but I would say all options are on the table. I'll talk a little bit about some background to help you understand why we're in a delicate dance that we are. And it starts with the 2010 elections. We saw 96 freshmen come in the House with Republican control. The Speaker Boehner is not unaware of agriculture. He has served on the Agriculture Committee in the past. The leaders in the House, of course, are Chairman Lucas, who is from Oklahoma, and the ranking member is the previous chair of the House Ag Committee, and that is Colin Peterson from Minnesota. But Chairman Lucas has a very special challenge this year. There are 23 Republicans on that committee, and 16 are freshmen. And I believe of that 16, only two have rural, really a, what you'd call a rural constituency. The other 14 are urban, and they have a very much higher concern about what's happening with nutrition and food stamps than they do about commodity title. Over in the Senate, of course, the Democrats retain control, very narrow majority there. And the Senate Ag Committee, the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, because of the loss by of Senator Lincoln in Arkansas in her election bid, she had been the chairman of the Ag Committee. It went to Debbie Stabenow, who is from Michigan, who, I got to say, when we saw that Blanche Lincoln was losing and the likely move would be to Chairman Stabenow, there was some real concern about Chairman Stabenow's willingness to focus on what we refer to as production agriculture, the commodities. But she has. She's been a friend so far. She does have concern about specialty crops and so forth. There are a lot of those in Michigan, but not to ignore or to the detriment of the commodity groups. Interesting thing for cotton there, though. Look at that. Zero senators from Cotton Belt Democrats on that committee. And four Republicans from the cotton states. But remember, the Democrats are the majority in the Senate. So you also have on that committee some very powerful people. You have a former Secretary of Agriculture. You have several former chairmen of the committee. You have the chairman of the Budget and Finance Committees. And you have the minority leader. So it's a committee that's made up of strong leadership from other areas in the Senate and some pretty strong backgrounds. That makes Chairman Stabenow's work all the harder because there are some people watching her very carefully. We saw shaping up that this was going to be a tough 2011 and the farm bill debate would be a very, very tough go. And that started with H.R. 1 over in the House. As H.R. 1 was considered, there were numerous agricultural amendments that were offered. And that was a signal right there that remember that when the Republicans took the House, one of the things that Boehner did was he immediately said, we are changing the way the House works, and we will have open floor debates When bills move across the floor of this assembly, they will be open to amendment. That sounds good. Until you have a piece of legislation you're particularly interested that you want moved across the floor and it's open to amendment. It can make life very difficult. And so that's what happened. With H.R. 1, there were numerous amendments. Some were defeated, some passed. But we saw an attempt to reduce the adjusted gross income qualification to $250,000. We saw an attempt to reduce the payment limits and to terminate the U.S.-Brazil framework agreement that calls for the U.S. government to make payments monthly to Brazil while Brazil suspends retaliation under that it was granted under the WTO case. Eventually, the House adopted a budget last year to reduce commodity funding by $30 billion. That was a good warning shot about what we were going to face. We saw further in ag appropriations when they were unsuccessful in getting some of those amendments passed on the H.R. 1. As ag appropriations came up, again, more attempts to create tighter definition on AGI, tighter payment limits, and the Brazil framework agreement. And in that case, they actually passed an amendment to suspend payments to Brazil. The Senate did adopt the AGI for direct payments, a new AGI test. And in conference, when the Senate and the House committees went to conference, there was an agreement. The National Cotton Council and a number of others who were concerned about the possibility of a trade war, essentially, because if you suspend those payments, you would get Brazil retaliating on U.S. goods and services going into Brazil. So there was an agreement to drop the amendment regarding suspension of the payments. The thing that we started talking about last year were the killer bees. We saw three of them: baselines, budget, and Brazil. And what happened was we thought we saw a way forward when there was an opportunity in 2011 to craft a farm bill that could answer the problems that agriculture faced with the Joint Committee. In August, it was clear that in order to extend the ability for the U.S. to write more debt, we had to do something, and so we saw the Budget Control Act of 2011 created that had very tight timelines for a joint committee to come up with $1.2 trillion in reductions in budget over a 10-year period or face sequestration beginning January 1 of 2013. And so they established this joint committee, and agriculture actually went to work in earnest to say it could offer cuts and provide the Joint Committee a package that would work for agriculture. But interestingly enough, did you notice among all the other entitlement programs and policies that are out there, ag was the only one that came forward with a plan for deficit reduction that it offered to the Joint Committee? The Ag Committee was the only one that offered something. And that $23 billion that it offered was just a number that was derived by the leadership in the House and Senate Ag Committees. That wasn't a number that it was given by the Joint Committee. That wasn't a number that came from the Senate or came from the House Budget Committees. It was a number that agriculture and the leadership in the two committees created. And it had a program that most of us think we know what's in it. It's been called the secret farm program because pieces of it are generally known, but because it never became law, the entirety of the proposal is not well known. But it did offer choices for our growers, and it met the $23 billion cut over a 10-year period, and it included what Cotton proposed. And we proposed something that we said would do two things. It would address reduced budget and Brazil. And that was a shallow loss, area-wide revenue program that we referred to as STACS. And we believe that it addresses, again, both budget and Brazil issues. Ultimately, the Joint Committee failed to act, and so that package, it still exists there, but it's not clear that the Senate will agree that $23 billion is enough, and I think most of you are aware that yesterday the House said that the challenge to the House Ag Committee is to find House policy that would save $33 billion, not $23 billion. So as we started in 2012 without the Joint Committee and to begin the normal process of a farm bill, what agriculture in general was attempting to do, National Cotton Council working with the other commodity groups, was to lock in the $23 billion as an appropriate budget or deficit reduction effort on the part of agriculture for writing a farm bill and to eliminate the threat of. And if writing a bill to a $23 billion cut would be agreed in Congress that there was no need for sequestration then of any payments in 2013. So it would eliminate the threat of across the board. It's clear that, as you're all aware, this farm bill will expire with the 2012 crop. We do need something that begins to tell farmers what to expect in 2013. And the one thing that the National Cotton Council has said now for the last 2 years is that agriculture needs options. This one-size-fits-all doesn't work. The 2008 Farm Bill, in fact, had options to it. It wasn't one-size-fits-all. Producers could go into acre if they wanted to. It had options. And our view is that U.S. agriculture is so complex and diverse that options are what is required to serve this industry well. And again, we think our program addresses both budget savings and the Brazil issue. We'll talk some more about this Brazil thing in a minute. Farm bill has started under what we know as regular order, which is you do hearings, then you do a markup in committee, then you do floor debate, where there are possibility of amendments. Both the House and Senate committees do their work, move them across the floors, and you eventually move to a conference of the House and Senate committee packages. You notice on there it says with amendments. And that's because so far Mr. Lucas has been unable to get a pledge from the Speaker, Mr. Boehner, to have anything other than an open rule when a farm bill is considered in the House. And I would tell you that most people in agriculture and the House Ag Committee are very nervous about what moving a package of legislation across the floor of the House might do to the ultimate package, what it might look like. The starting place up until the House action yesterday was essentially $23 billion in cuts. Most of us have been working on that assumption, both the House staff for the last 3 months as well as the Senate staff. You've seen that most of the programs talk about some sort of revenue plans. I can tell you that the plan that was in place for consideration by the Joint Committee and then is essentially the starting place, has no direct payments in it whatsoever. Direct payments, the money for that was in direct payments was taken to pay for other programs, these revenue programs that would be offered. We also had some higher target prices for some commodities. But as you see here, the House passed a budget yesterday that requires $33 billion instead of $23 billion, and it specifically identifies some cuts to commodity conservation and crop insurance that are higher than the cuts that were in the $23 billion plan. That $23 billion package is fairly fragile. I would tell you that if you have to take much more than another billion or two out of commodity programs. It's going to cause an unraveling, because you're going to have to really start paring back on a wide number of things. And most people and most producers will begin to realize that the safety net that's been there for agriculture is disappearing. The safety net that would exist would likely be just a marketing loan for most commodities. And that's, I think, going to be disturbing to all of us. But that's a reality as you start doing these budget cuts, and those budget cuts get deeper as you move towards satisfying a $33 billion cut instead of a $23 billion cut. You're cutting, and you're starting to cut into the very basic safety net that's been out there for U.S. agriculture. One of the other problems that agriculture has faced, it's not enough that, I mean, Congress has a difficult time meeting its own requirements. If it's going to do these cuts, it says that's its rules and it has to write law for it. That's difficult enough. But the commodity groups themselves have made it a little difficult on Congress, because the commodity groups aren't giving Congress a unified voice. And I don't mind telling you, because I can speak for cotton, that's my job, that some grains and oil seeds are trying to take your money. And not just our money, they're trying to take the money that's in the baseline for rice and peanuts and cotton in order to enrich their revenue programs. If they think we're going to just roll over and say, oh, yeah, that's just fair, don't think so. So Congress comes to us and says, you know, you really need to give us better direction, but I'm sorry, as long as the grains and oil seeds are going to try to steal several hundred millions of dollars annually in support from rice, peanuts, and cotton to enrich their programs, we're not going to speak with a single voice. Not going to happen. And it just will make Congress's job more difficult. A timeline, I can give you sort of how things will flow, but I can't give you dates because they don't have them. But you know that the Senate wrapped up their hearings. They had four hearings. They wrapped up with one on March 15th that was on commodities and the crop insurance title. The House is having hearings now. There's one going on right now in Jonesboro, Arkansas. They will have one, I think, in a few days in Kansas. There are field hearings. They'll probably come back after the Easter recess and perhaps have a few there in Washington, D.C. It was reported that staff in the Senate have said that the Senate Ag Committee will be attempt to have markup after they return from the Easter recess, so late April, early May, an attempt to do a markup in committee. Now, whether the Senate can move from a markup to a committee product, we don't know. Whether the House can move from hearings to actually getting a chairman's mark, we don't know. But we do know that there's a timeline out there for Congress itself, because this is a year of elections, which says after they return from the August recess, Congress won't be in session very long. And so then you get into what are the options. So can they complete their work by November? I think that's very difficult. It's really not November. They'll probably adjourn in very early October, since it's an election year. So can they get that work done in a shortened work year? And I think that's really yet to be determined. Chairman Stabenow has not been given any date possible yet by Reed that she could actually take any committee product from her committee across the floor of the Senate. It's not on any legislative calendar yet. And as I said, there's no calendar in the House on this either. Now, they have to do something, because you're all aware that if a farm bill expires with no action by Congress, you revert to some of the old language from 49 They will do something. So then what do? They write something in a lame duck session after election, or do they do an extension, short term? And again, I'm not putting probabilities on any of those. They're all options. How they'll work has yet to be, I think, we don't see the way forward exactly. I want to talk a little bit about the Brazil case because for most of, if I've lived it now since 2002, and my frustration with it is beyond belief, and I know yours is too. This gives you a timeline. 2002, there's a case filed. We spend lots of money flying back and forth to Geneva. 2005 are the first findings by the panels. Those things are appealed. In 2009, eventually, the WTO authorizes Brazil to retaliate against U.S. goods, services, and intellectual property, which was a real twist. And in 2010, Brazil publishes the list of products that it will retaliate against and the appropriate tariffs that would be applied, and the intellectual property items they are now willing to vacate property rights on. That motivated Congress and the administration. It motivated pharma. It motivated the entertainment industry. Lots of people descended on Congress and said, fix this. So the fix was a temporary fix, an agreement that was entered into in the spring of 2010 called the Framework Agreement, in which the U.S. made commitments to Brazil that it was going to do certain things on a timeline on GSM, export credit guarantees, and it would make payments to Brazil equal to $147 million a year, and that this agreement would expire with either successor legislation to the 2008 Farm Bill or the end of 2012, whichever came first. So when we get to the end of 2012 and Congress simply extends the current Farm Bill, we may have some serious trouble with Brazil. It's a possibility. Now, when the National Cotton Council began looking at the details of the findings by the panels in the WTO, one thing jumped out at us, and that was they specifically repeatedly said the marketing loan and the countercyclical program caused serious prejudice to Brazil's cotton interests, that is economic damage. But the thing that the Brazilians continually challenged and the panels would not say generated that serious damage to Brazil's interests were direct payments and crop insurance. And the panel repeatedly said there's no damage to Brazil from the existence of direct payments on cotton and crop insurance for cotton. And so as the staff began more and more to hone in on what might be possibilities for alternatives for support of cotton from the current program to attempt to address, again, Brazil and budget, this shallow loss program that we call STACS was more strengthened in our mind by the fact that the panels had continually rejected Brazil's claims of damage from crop insurance. Brazil then issued a letter to the chairman of the House and Senate Ag Committees and made the letter public. And that letter criticized STACS, but it also criticized everything else that was being talked about in farm policy. So from the standpoint of many of the people on the Hill, most people thought Brazil really was overreaching, that Brazil was now talking about comprehensive things in farm policy that the case didn't have anything to do with. The case had to deal with GSM export credits for all commodities and specifically the marketing loan and the countercyclical program for upland cotton. But Brazil in this then criticized everything that had been talked about in terms of U.S. policy in the fall of 2011. They also made several statements in that letter about a preference for current policy. And most people said, well, then we just ought to stick with what we have. Well, their letter wasn't written to clearly tell what they wanted. And in a further discussion that USDA and USTR had with Brazil, Brazil said, no, we don't think a 65, the 72-cent target price minus the 6.67 cents in direct payments, which equates to about a 64.5-cent target price, no, we're not saying that's a good policy. Our comments are meant to say we think decoupled payments that are derived from historic base acres and yields, and of course, if you combine a historic base of, and yield with a decoupled program, you have then very fixed payments. There's an absolute maximum that could ever be spent under the countercyclical program. It's the maximum countercyclical payment rate times acres that are qualified, 85% of those times yield, period. And that's what they liked about current policy. It wasn't the 65-cent target price that they liked. So it was. It wasn't that they liked current policy. They liked facets of current policy. So our response to their letter was that we felt like Brazil was in fact attempting to expand the scope of their negotiation or interaction on farm policy, that they were dealing with issues that had nothing to do with cotton, and they were attempting to interject themselves in the construction of overall U.S. farm policy. We have proposed a modification to the marketing loan for upland cotton that would let that loan rate float between 52 cents and 47 cents based on the two previous years' average AWP. We've shifted the remaining baseline into the supporting of a stacks premium. It would still require producers to buy stacks. They would have to pay some for stacks. But it would be an insurance product. It would be offered by the private insurers, and that the WTO has found that crop insurance was not an issue as far as damage to Brazil's cotton interests. So we felt like it did a number of things. And lastly, inside the framework, there are two statements towards the bottom of the framework agreement, if you read it, that says that it is the intention of the U.S. to have cotton policy that significantly reduces trade-distorting outlays from the level that existed from 1999 to 2005. Okay, now, if you go back to 1999-2005, you can find a couple of years in there where between the marketing loan gain and the countercyclical payment, we paid out over $3.5 billion to U.S. cotton producers. And that was what Brazil was screaming about when the case was brought up. And so you can imagine you can have a pretty significant reduction in there in $3.5 billion and still have a pretty effective program, in my opinion, to protect producers in a safety net. We have consulted with congressional leaders on a continuing basis. We continue to consult with USDR and USDA. As I told you, most people that were on the Hill believed that the Brazil letter was overreaching. They thought that they were trying to be expansive in what they were saying the U.S. should be doing in agricultural policy. The other thing that was taken away was they saw the letter as an indication that Brazil was willing to negotiate. So we have met with Ambassador Acevedo. We will meet with Brazil's cotton leaders. And there's an organization in Brazil known as ABRAPA. We will be meeting with their leaders as well to see if a negotiation to this case can be reached. But the interesting thing is to keep in mind that cotton reaching an agreement doesn't solve the case in its entirety. There's another whole piece out there that we've never brought you into that is ongoing, and that's on GSM export credit guarantees. Brazil wants more done on that before they're going to agree that the totality of this case has been resolved. But we will work for adoption of a budget that, or a program that is effective in terms of has a solid safety net for producers, it meets its budget requirements, and addresses the Brazil issue. The other thing that I can tell you that we have to be prepared for, and all of agriculture is will grapple with this eventually, is transition or extension. As you run up farther into this year and you don't have a farm bill, and you're talking about eventually a farm bill that is substantially different from current bill, in all likelihood, you can't get it in place by 2013. FSA and RMA can do some pretty good things, but if they're not handed the final legislation until late in 2012, they just won't get it done so that it's in effect for 2013. There will be a transition in all likelihood if that happens. So that has to be considered as well. The next consultation between the Brazilians and the U.S. is scheduled for the week of April the 16th. Ambassador Acevedo will be in country, and he will have opportunity to talk to folks on the Hill, and he will be meeting with USTR and USDA. And as I noted, the GSM modifications sought by Brazil have not been achieved to this point, and Brazil's becoming quite agitated about that. Now, part of that's because in the international market, financing has just dried up everywhere. And so GSM in the U.S. is probably one of the few places where there are credit guarantees still being offered. And so the use of GSM has not been reduced, which was one of the objectives of Brazil. But it really reflects the international financial situation, not that the U.S. is being aggressive pushing GSM out. The U.S. has raised the rates that it charges for individuals and companies to use GSM. So it's not a matter that the U.S. has been aggressive about it. It really reflects more international alternatives are drying up, so there's more use of GSM. But that is not a sufficient answer as far as Brazil's concerned. So where are we now? One of the more difficult things that we see happening is there are a number of individuals or interests that certainly would like to have more money moved out of cotton over into what they seek in terms of revenue plans or other programs for grains and oilseeds. So what you will see in the coming weeks as farm policy really gets geared up are more criticisms of the Stacks proposal saying it doesn't satisfy Brazil, you need to do more to it. These aren't people who are really concerned about satisfying Brazil. They're people who want our money. That's pure and simple. They just want our baseline, and they want to move it over into their baseline. So you will see more of outside interest weighing in the next several weeks on cotton policy in particular. The disagreements between the commodity groups we would hope could be resolved, but I'm frankly not optimistic. As long as the grains and oilseeds simply want to take hundreds of million dollars from the baselines of cotton, rice, and peanuts, I don't think there's going to be an agreement. And it's just going to make the work of Congress all the more difficult. I think it's clear choices need to be in there. Choices were part of the 08 bill with the acre program. I think wider choices. The diversity, again, that exists in U.S. agriculture, I think, demands choices. And lastly, as I note there, patience, perseverance, and unity. I thank you for your support of the National Cotton Council. The unity that we can bring when we talk about cotton policy is absolutely critical in the environment I've just described to you. So I thank you for your time this morning and your support of the National Cotton Council.